The following message comes to you from the pulpit of Zion Primitive Baptist Church in Zion, Alabama. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.
I want to welcome you today to the Gospel of Grace podcast. This podcast is an outreach of Zion Primitive Baptist Church near Gordo, Alabama. I'm Chris McCool, and I serve as pastor of Zion Primitive Baptist Church. We are a congregation where families worship together through the simple practice of preaching, praying, and singing. We would love to have you worship with us in person sometime. The church address is 9487 County Road 49, Gordo, Alabama. We meet every Sunday morning at 10:30 and every Sunday evening at 5 p.m. and the first and third Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m.
In this next to last chapter of Revelation, John describes a vision of heaven that he has been given. We first learn that heaven is a literal physical place, which John calls a new heaven and a new earth. Join us as we look further into this chapter to learn more about the glorious vision that's been given to us through John.
Tonight we want to begin the 21st chapter of Revelation. So we've covered about 90% of the book in terms of the number of words and number of verses. And as we begin the 21st chapter, the focus changes. A lot of the book, as you'll recall, has been about God judging the wicked in order to deliver his people. And we've read about how God does that in a timely sense, and also, as we read in chapter 20, in an eternal sense as well. But here in chapter 21, it changes focus, and now John is given a vision of heaven. And we probably won't get to it tonight, but in the latter part of this chapter, he even describes the dimensions of heaven. And I believe those may be the literal dimensions of the city where God's people will dwell in heaven. But let's begin in chapter 21 and verse 1. John says, "And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea." Now, this is the next to the last chapter in the Bible. And he says, "I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away." In Genesis, the very first book of the Bible, in the first chapter and the first verse, it says, "In the beginning God created the heaven and the earth." So no doubt this is the first heaven and the first earth. In the beginning, that is when time began, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth. Now, the earth there refers to the land, the ground, this planet on which we live. And the heaven refers to the expanse above the earth. Now, prior to the flood, there was a canopy of water that encircled the earth. And so when he says, "In the beginning God created the heaven and the earth," I believe he's referring specifically here to this expanse, this canopy of water that encircled the earth. You know, when we look up, we see the sky and the clouds, and we can refer to that as heaven. And the Bible refers to it sometimes as heaven. But in the beginning, it was much more significant, because prior to the flood, there was that stable canopy of water encircling the earth. And so the space between the earth and that canopy of water would be what would be referred to or considered as heaven or space, the arch of the sky, you might say. So here in Revelation chapter 21, he says, the first heaven and the first earth were passed away. Now, as I've already said, we know that during the flood, that canopy of water that encircled the earth was used of God to flood the earth, but we still see a sky. We still look up and see that which we consider the heaven or the sky. So as we read this in Revelation 21 and verse 1, he's saying that this first heaven and this first earth on which we now dwell is passed away. And he sees a new heaven and a new earth. So we need to recognize there that heaven is a physical, literal place. You know, it's not people floating around on clouds. Heaven's a place. And he refers to it as a new heaven and a new earth. Peter used similar language in 2 Peter chapter 3. And notice this. Sometimes the word heaven is used in the singular, and sometimes it's used in the plural. Peter used it in the plural. And he says here in 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 13, having described the destruction of this present world in which we live, he then says in verse 13, nevertheless, we according to his promise look for new heavens and a new earth wherein dwelleth righteousness. So he says it's according to God's promise that we look for new heavens and a new earth. And what's unique about this one, he says, wherein dwelleth righteousness. Now, this world that we're living in now, this earth and this heaven that we dwell in now, is not filled with righteousness. It's in many ways filled with unrighteousness. But the new heaven and the new earth is going to be much different. So now notice what he says again here in Revelation 21. I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away. And throughout the New Testament, you know, we read about this earth that we dwell on now, this place where we live now, that it will be destroyed by fire. He says, I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away. So the simple point that John's making here is this place where we live now is gone. It's going to pass away. I believe it's in Hebrews that the writer talks about it being folded up like a garment and laid aside. Peter describes it as it being destroyed by fire. But he says there's going to be a new heaven and a new earth, a new place. A new place. And he says, and there was no more sea. Now, what's the significance of that? Well, when John was, rather than being in prison for his faith, he was banished to the Isle of Patmos, which was only about 13 square miles. You know, and that's really small if you think about it, because, you know, 3 times 3 is 9. Four times four is 16, so that's between 3 and 4 miles long and 3 and 4 miles wide. That's fairly small, and it was surrounded by the sea. So probably most of the time, John could hear the sea. He could hear the waves of the sea. And that reminded him of where he was and why he was there. And furthermore, the sea is, I believe, representative of that which is not at rest, or it can represent trouble. So John personally, this is his personal perspective here in Revelation 21. He said this new heaven and this new earth, there's not going to be any more sea. No more isolation. No more banishment. No more trouble. No more unrest. No more being persecuted. No more sea. I believe those are perhaps some of the things that he had in mind when he saw this new heaven and new earth, and there was no more sea. Then notice how he describes it, this new heaven and new earth. And I, John, saw the holy city. You know, a holy city is a sacred city. Remember, Peter said this is a place wherein dwelleth righteousness. In other words, there's no sin there. Well, a holy city, that's another way of saying the same thing. No sin. It's a holy city. And he refers to it also as New Jerusalem. Now, in the same way that there was a former heaven and a former earth, there also was a former Jerusalem, wasn't there? Jerusalem was the place in the Old Testament. It was the place for the true worship of God. So he says this is like a new Jerusalem. New heaven, new earth, new Jerusalem. Coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. Now that's common terminology in the Bible, isn't it? To refer to God's people as the bride of Christ. And this new heaven, this new earth, this city of God, this new Jerusalem, this holy city is like that. It is like a bride. It's prepared, it says, as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, watch this now, he says, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men. Now, throughout Bible history, the tabernacle was the place where men assembled to worship God. It's the place where they went. You know, even today we recognize that this physical building where we worship is not significant like Jerusalem was in the Old Testament. They truly were to assemble at a particular place to worship God in the Old Testament. It's not that way today, but we still have structures where we assemble. The focus throughout the Bible and even in our lives today is that we assemble together, we meet with God. But notice how it's different here. He says, I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle, that means the dwelling place of God, is with men. The dwelling place of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, And they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. So notice now in eternal heaven, which is what he's describing here, he says God dwells with them. Instead of us going to meet God, he's dwelling with us. We're going to the place where he dwells. And that's why he uses this language, I think. The tabernacle of God, the dwelling place of God, is with men. And he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. Notice all of those words that he uses to emphasize that we are together with God. It wouldn't be heaven if God wasn't there, would it? But this new heaven and new earth, this holy city, this new Jerusalem that comes down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband, this is a place where God dwells with his people. Now, notice in verse 4 how heaven is described. It's described not in terms of what is there, but what's not there. And when you read this, it really, I believe, makes you long for it more when you realize what's not going to be there. Verse 4, it says, first of all, and God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. The first thing it says about what it will be like in heaven, that's what we're reading about now. What's it going to be like in heaven? The first thing is everything that was troublesome to us is going to end and go away. That's what he means when he says, God shall wipe away all tears. Notice it's not specific, it's general. God shall wipe away all tears. Well, tears are the result of anything that's troublesome, anything that's a problem, anything that you equate with sadness or sorrow. God will wipe away all tears. All of that will stop. That mindset, that state of emotion will be no more. That's what he's saying. Anything that has ever caused you to shed tears here, that won't ever happen in heaven. God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. And there shall be no more death. Now that causes tears, doesn't it? When someone dies, no one will ever die in heaven. Now listen to these words. Keep all this together. God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. And there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain. Now this about covers it, doesn't it? Think about it. God wipes away all tears. Anything that would cause you to shed tears will be absent from heaven. No one will die anymore in heaven. And he says, there'll be no sorrow, crying, or pain. No more sorrow or crying or pain. I believe that could be physical pain or emotional pain. We can't fathom what that would be like, can we? To be in an environment where all of those things are absent eternally. But that's what it is going to be like in heaven. For the former things are passed away. In other words, it's not going to be like it used to be anymore. The way it was down here in this first heaven and this first earth, the way it was down here in this world of sin and sorrow and difficulty and disappointment and all those things, it says the former things, all the things that would produce a sorrow or crying or pain or death, all of those things are passed away. As long as we're here, those things never pass away, do they? They'll be part of our life until the day we die. And he that sat upon the throne said, behold, I make all things new. And he said unto me, write, for these words are true and faithful. You know, many times in Paul's writings, he'll say, this is a faithful saying, or this is a true saying. And that's not to suggest that some of the other things he said weren't true or weren't faithful, but that's just used to emphasize the significance of the point he's making. So notice here, the Lord is using that same approach with John. He says, he that sat upon the throne said, behold, to make all things new. And he said unto me, write, for these words are true and faithful. And he said unto me, it is done. Now, when Jesus died on the cross, you know, we think about in the Gospel of John, you remember he said, it is finished. And that meant he finished the work of redemption. He finished suffering for the sins of his people. Well, here he's talking about this time world has ended. The former things are passed away. There's a new heaven and a new earth. It is done. Time is done. All these difficulties are over. It is done. He says, I am Alpha and Omega, and that means the beginning and the end. I'm the beginning and the end. You know, it says in Hebrews that Jesus is the author and finisher of our faith. You know what that means? He's the one that started your faith, and he's the one that'll conclude your faith. When you die and you go to be with the Lord in heaven, faith is no more a part of you as a being, because you don't have to put faith in something that's a reality in front of you, that's something that you're in the presence of. But here he says, I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give unto him that is athirst of the fountain of the water of life freely. Now here's the one thing that he says about heaven in terms of what is there. You know, all these other words in verse 4 talked about what's not going to be there, what it's not going to be like in heaven. But when we get down here to verse 6, he now tells us what we will have in heaven. He says, I will give unto him that is athirst. You know, Jesus talked about that back in Matthew chapter 5 as it applies to the church or to the kingdom of God here in this world. He said in Matthew 5, 6, "Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled." You know, that's what we want here in the kingdom. That's what we long for here in the kingdom. That's what we receive from time to time here in the kingdom of God. But we never are fully satisfied, are we? The Old Testament writer said, "When I awake in thy likeness, I'll be satisfied." Well, here he says, "In heaven, I will give unto him that is athirst." Are you one of those that is athirst? He says, "In heaven, I will give unto him that is athirst of the fountain of the water of life freely." An abundance. No holding back. "I will give him of the fountain of the water of life freely." You'll be satisfied in heaven. Your spiritual thirst will be eternally quenched in heaven. You'll be constantly satisfied in heaven. Now look at verse 7. "He that overcometh shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son." Now in Revelation chapter 12 and verse 11, you remember this? He uses that word overcome. And he says, "And they overcame him," that is, overcame the adversary, the beast, the devil. "They overcame him by the blood of the Lamb." See, our overcoming is not based on our performance. And so here in Revelation 21, he says, "He that overcometh shall inherit all things." What are you going to inherit? What is he talking about when he says he'll inherit all things? Well, you go back to Romans chapter 8. You remember it talks about the all things there. It says in Romans chapter 8 and verse 28, "And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. For whom he did foreknow, he also did predestinate to be conformed to the image of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. Moreover, whom he did predestinate, them he also called, and whom he called, them he also justified, and whom he justified, he also glorified. What shall we say then to these things? If God be for us, who can be against us? He that spared not his own Son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not also with him freely give us all things?" What's the context of all things there? In both the verses, in all the verses there, where he says all things, it's in the context of all the components, if you want to think of it that way, of our eternal salvation. Everything about our salvation, God's foreknowledge and predestination and justification and calling and glorification, all those things, and what we have as a result of God's salvation is our inheritance in heaven. That's what he's saying here in Revelation chapter 21. He says, "He that overcometh shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son." And then notice in verse 8, this clearly establishes the doctrine of election. He says, "But the fearful and unbelieving and the abominable and murderers and whoremongers and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is the second death." Now, it's important to recognize that he's describing the character of those that have not the Spirit of God. You know, back in Romans chapter 8, notice how this is described. In Romans chapter 8, he says in verse 6, "For to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. Because the carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be. So then they that are in the flesh cannot please God." Now the context there in Romans chapter 8 is the nature of those that have not the Spirit of God. And here in Revelation 21, he's describing the character and behavior of those that have not the Spirit of God. And he says, they'll have their part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. The second death was referred to in Revelation chapter 20. And you remember what it said in verse 14 of Revelation 20? Death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. But we know that those that are God's children, those that have been redeemed by the blood of Christ, those that have part in the first resurrection will not be hurt of the second death because they're secure in Christ. I appreciate your attention tonight.
Thank you for joining us today on the Gospel of Grace podcast. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow when we'll present another message of God's sovereign grace. In the meantime, if you have any questions or would like to contact us, please go to the website at zionpbc.com. Or you can subscribe and get email updates every time a new sermon or any announcements are posted. Also, you can contact me directly at jchrismccool@gmail.com. That's the letter jchrismccool@gmail.com. Again, thank you for joining us today on the Gospel of Grace podcast, and may the Lord bless you is my prayer.
We thank you for listening to today's message. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.